pick a window. This is the Defenestrate Media Network.
Oh, wow. I don't know about the costume, but that's some set of wheels.
Hi, I'm Marv Wolfman, and you're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
You're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast, and I'm your host, the radioactive professor of all things comic book, J.C. Carter. Joining me today on the show, my super friends, in the North, our punk pixie, Miss Jocelyn Christensen.
Hi, guys.
And on the bridge of his own private enterprise, our very own Admiral James Tiberius Batman Laird, Jeff Bell.
I actually did a Christmas thing today.
Uh-oh.
Oh, you did? What's that?
We watched the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that one.
Yep.
I have to watch that.
And then we tried Hannah Waddingham's Christmas Spectacular.
You couldn't do it, could you?
I think we're going to do that on Christmas Day in the background.
Okay, fair.
It's just too fucking, it's too fucking precious. It's too fucking adorable. I can't take it.
Isn't she so delightful in it? Like, she just exudes joy. It's just disgusting. I do. I love it. I was watching Ted Lasso last night, and I was like, oh, I should put that Christmas special on again. It's so good.
All right,
anyways, what else is new with you guys? What have you guys been up to this week?
There's really a big bunch of fat nothing this week. Just nothing going on this week.
No, I just missed you at the shop on Friday. I went in to the shop on Friday this week.
I
had my delightful aunt visiting from out of state this mm-hmm. week. So I had taken Friday off because we had Pioneer Theater tickets Friday night. Mm. So we took the day and went and saw the Windows in downtown. And we stopped mm-hmm. in at Dr. Volt's and at the Assistance League thrift store and just kind of were out and about. But I walked into the shop and Jeff goes, oh, you just missed JC. And I went, bummer. We missed our staff meeting.
Yeah, I was in there for a little while too, because I'd brought him some gaff tape to fix his rug. And
oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But, you know, it gets busy and I don't want to keep him. So I usually extricate myself when I can. Plus, I needed to get back to do something. I don't remember what it was. Sit around and feel sorry for myself. I don't know exactly.
Maybe. Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think I mentioned it already on the show, but yeah, my contracting agency cut my hours and basically told me you have to take at least one day off unpaid every week now until mm-hmm. the end of the contract, which is in March. So whereas it's awesome to get my Fridays off, it's awesome until payday. And then I see the hit
right.
I'm like, motherfucker.
Yeah. Right.
So, yeah, it sucks. But, and then the other part that sucks, and I was telling Jeff this in the shop, it's like, it's not like they've cut the amount of work I have to do or get done in a week.
Right, right.
So I'm nonstop from, you know, top of the morning to the end of the evening. And it's like, I'm so exhausted on Friday. I know I was like, ooh, I'll have Fridays. I can get some writing done. I can work on some stuff. I don't want to fucking look at my computer come on Friday. You know, it's like, I just want to go to the comic book store and then watch TV or something. Yeah, it sucks. But what are you going to do?
Right.
Well, I know what I'm trying to do, but it's not working because, you know, I'm old and apparently aged out of my industry. So, yeah.
Welcome to old.
Yep. Welcome to old. We know all about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's you've had the gig now long enough.
Yeah.
That you're coming into being too old late, ironically enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't jump ship after 3 years. You know, I was having too good of a time in year 3 and things were going really well. And then year four, things started to suck, but not enough for me to go, oh, I better get the fuck out of here. And then we finally hit this year, which is my ninth year. And I'm like, holy shit. Resume. Just throw them out there. And then every week, rejection letter. And I'm like, fuck you. You'd think my resume, which looks, I think it looks really good, would at least garner me one interview. Alas, no. And I get offers for, you know, gig work, but it's either too, they don't want to pay me. They basically don't want to meet my salary expectations. So, yeah.
I'm to the point now looking for work where just to make $20 an hour, you know, is call center work.
Mm-hmm.
And I swore to myself I'd never do that again, but I'm making so little selling comic books. You know,
right.
I got to find something that makes the fucking ends meet, and it looks like that's what it's going to be. I don't know how I'm going to deal with the dog that won't shut the fuck up, but, you know, we'll deal with that mess when we get to it. You know.
For the record, I can't hear the dog.
Well, he's being quiet right now.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
It's when he's sitting there at his desk working, because you can work from home a lot of times with these...
I won't do on-site call. I mean, I still have my pride. Give me two more years and then I'll go in. But for now, yeah, it's remote or it's nothing.
Yeah. That's fair. That is absolutely fair.
Yeah, I'd rather be fucking hungry all the time like I am now than fucking go sit in a fucking call center.
It's funny. We have caption call here in Utah, in Murray. I worked for him as a tech writer for just a short contract. It was actually the job I did just before getting my current position that I've had for 9 years, which was the, like, I'm not leaving if I can help it job at that point. It was funny because I've had a lot of friends who've worked at caption call in the theater. They take the job because they're like, I need something while I'm trying to get this theater thing to work for me. And I mean, almost every one of them, except for one, they were like, yeah, it destroyed my soul working for Caption Call, because Caption Call, their whole thing about Caption Call is their TT, what is it? Touch tone, something for the deaf. Basically a deaf person has a Caption Call phone. You have to transcribe. When somebody calls them, you have to sit and transcribe what this person has said so they can read it. Cause they can't hear them.
It's like live action closed captioning.
Exactly. And they're like, the racist stuff that I have to type out, because you can't not type it. It is awful. Awful. Usually, you know, and a lot of these people are who've lost their hearing are like my mom, sweet little old ladies who lost their hearing. But, you know, unlike my mother, still had their vision as well. So they're able to read the little screen on the capture call phone. But it was like, yeah, it's, you know, this sweet little old lady, and all of a sudden N-word this and S-word that. And yeah, it's like, yeah,
just, I've never once thought about that as a, that if you were doing that, you would have to do that.
Yeah. You have to have a thick.
Oh, ouch. Yeah.
My buddy Dallin rose to the level of supervisor there before he finally gave up and left. But, and it was because he had a super thick skin and was like, I just don't even think about it. It's just my fingers moving, you know? He said, I just do it and don't try to think about it. And it's like, I think that's the only way you could do it. But yeah, a lot of them were like, oh, it destroys my soul. So yeah, I don't know if I'd recommend caption call unless you know, want to let out your inner redneck, I guess, to write horrible things. But yeah.
No, thanks.
Particularly because, you know, the transphobes would be calling in, you know, calling their mother-in-law or something. I just see Jeff on a call with a transphobe. It's like, keep my job or let them know what I think.
No, that one's a go. That's a rewrite it as you go.
Yep, exactly. Yep. I think I can rewrite this, make it a better script. Yeah.
Telling their deaf friend how much they hate trans people would probably be a really good invitation to write to their deaf friend about how much they think dick is yummy.
That would be
beautiful. I like dicks. Dicky, dicky, dick, dick, dick.
Well, on that happy note, let's dive into some news.
Dick, dick, dick.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
Not sure which direction to go first, so we'll start with actor Ryan O'Neal, dead at 82. Nominated for a Best Actor Oscar in 1970's Love Story. That wildly inappropriate fucking movie. he was one of the biggest box office stars of the early 70s, passed away at the age of 82. His death was announced on Instagram by his son, Patrick. Patrick O'Neill. Mrs. O'Neill's bright-eyed boy.
Yes, that's right.
Although no cause of death was revealed in the post, the Associated Press noted that the actor was diagnosed with prostate cancer in 2012 and chronic leukemia a decade later. He's dead.
2012 and then leukemia in 2022. I mean, I know more than one person who had with prostate cancer who held on a lot longer than their doctor gave them, you know.
And, yeah, what did they give him? 6 months, give or take?
Yeah.
And he made it 3 years. Not too shabby.
Yeah. And my buddy Michael, he was diagnosed while Forrest was, you know, on his, fifth year or something. And he's still going, you know. It's like, yeah. And it was stage four. It was as bad as Forrest was. So, and he's still going. So, yeah. Apparently, it's not as big of a death sentence as they want to tell you it is. So
O'Neill went on to star in other critically acclaimed hits like What's Up, Doc?, Kubrick's Barry Lyndon, Paper Moon, in which he played opposite his daughter Tatum. Tatum O'Neill! If that's not the most Irish name you've ever heard, I don't know what is. Tatum. You know what's really tasty? With a piece of fish? Tatums.
Tatums.
Love me some Tatums.
Oh, Tatums. You know, I had a mad crush on Tatum O'Neill.
Oh, yeah.
Because of Little Darlings. Oh, yeah. Mad crush on Tatum O'Neill back in my day.
But he dated such luminaries as Barbara Streisand, Joan Collins, Diana Ross, and then settled down with Farrah Fawcett, mother of his youngest son, Redmond James Fawcett O'Neill. Mm-hmm. Most recently, you would have seen him as a recurring role on the Fox crime drama Bones, which I liked until they did a crossover with Sleepy Hollow, at which point the show lost all credibility. Mm-hmm. And it had very little to begin with.
Sleepy Hollow was where you drawed that line, huh? Drew that line?
Yep.
Drew that line.
In addition, in 2008, Mr. O'Neill was arrested for methamphetamine possession.
Ooh.
Yep. Oops. Zoom, zoom. Oops. And then the one that actually kind of, I mean, you know, whatever, O'Neill, I remember him from when I was a kid. But Andre Brower died at 60 fucking one.
Yeah, I know.
That's like your next birthday.
Yeah.
And now that I think about it, that's my next birthday too.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, anyway, Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Homicide: Life on the Street actor. It looks like it was a lung disease of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the article I pulled is the one I pulled from earlier in the week before it all came out, but... good actor. Really enjoyed him on Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
I've enjoyed him in all the work he's done. Brooklyn Nine-Nine, it's like they figured out, hey, he looks like the captain of a police department.
Yeah.
And he just got that job on something else I remember, and then on Brooklyn Nine-Nine as well. And I was like, that just fits him so well.
Yep. Yeah, Men of a Certain Age, that was not a bad show. Just didn't do well because none of us of that certain age were watching it. I caught it after.
I don't think we were of that certain age at the time. So now I'd probably watch it and laugh my ass off now. But
I have streamed it in the last couple of years, and it was pretty good. It was pretty damn good. But yeah, he was all over the place. House, Hack, Men of a Certain Age, The Mist, Salt, Law and Order, Special Victims Unit. Also did Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer, and voiced Darkseid in Superman, Batman, Apocalypse.
Yep.
Yep. So, pretty good, you know, good run, but very short.
No, that's dying too young.
Yeah. And then, because I'll leave you on some good news today, Badger from Firefly, some might know him as Crowley from Supernatural.
But
he'll always be Badger to me. Anyway, he's out of the hospital after suffering 6 heart attacks and somehow avoiding death. 59-year-old actor was spotted headed out of the Los Angeles area hospital on Thursday, grinning from ear to ear, throwing out some hugs to hospital staff. Yeah, he died several times. Several times. And they just kept bringing him back. He had a total blockage of his left anterior descending artery. So he credited his wife and the St. Joseph's team for his survival because he's not an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I'm glad he's alive.
I did enjoy him because the series is over, but I did enjoy him in Doom Patrol as well. He was there basically their Constantine because they couldn't use Constantine.
Yep. So.
Right.
Yeah, I liked him a lot in that too. Doctor Who?
Yep.
Astronaut. Remember that? Yeah.
That was a great, great, great episode. I love that
one. He did that, and then his dad, whom he looks just like him, played him, you know, in the future, which was really cool. So yeah, I remember that from back in the Impossible Astronaut days. Wow, that was a while ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, Mark Shepard. I love Mark Shepard. I'm so glad he's still alive. Yes.
Me too.
Keep him around. Fix your heart, Mark. Do the Kevin Smith thing. You know, whatever it takes.
Go for walks. You know? Get a dog.
Mm-hmm.
You can do it, buddy. But with that all said, that's it for the news.
We're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're talking moving pictures.
If you came across someone struggling with hunger, how would you recognize them? Would you notice a 16-year-old boy who got his first job?
Not for extra spending money, but to help feed his little sisters?
Or a mother who's in between jobs and sometimes goes to bed hungry so her kids can have dinner? I am the 1 in 8 Americans who struggle with hunger. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Elena Huffman, Abaddon on Supernatural, and you are listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
There's nothing wrong with your television. Do not attempt to adjust the picture.
What have you guys been watching this week in the moving pictures?
I watched a Christmas movie that I think shouldn't be defined as a Christmas movie, but I guess kind of it's a Christmas movie. It is about Christmas, but it has horrible people because it was Christmas with the Cranks.
And it was totally a Christmas movie.
It's even in the title.
It was so terrible. Those people were so horrible to each other.
Yes. That's the
give
comedy
me,
of it.
Give me White Christmas where everybody is kind. I don't like it. I don't like the grumpy people. No, I did at the end. You know, the redemption comes around. It's fantastic. Don't give me that look.
I feel so attacked right now with your grumpy people.
Well,
A false hug. A hug of lies.
That's never been a false hug. Don't even.
I don't like grumpy people.
I've watched Christmas with the Cranks pretty much every year. My biggest problem with it is the name. The original title was better. It was Skipping Christmas.
Skipping Christmas. Yes. And that would have been a much better title, but they didn't name it that because the same year Surviving Christmas came out and they didn't want you to mix them up.
That's some studio executives dipshit right there.
Yeah.
Oh God, they'll confuse it. No, we won't. And this one would survive because it's got Tim Allen. It's got
Jamie Lee Curtis, Dan Aykroyd.
Dan Aykroyd. That's what I was trying to remember. Yeah.
The annoying Dewey from Malcolm in the Middle.
Yes.
I can't remember that actor's name.
I love him as the he's basically Max from How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Once he's like, I got to fix all this. I got to fix this problem.
Yes.
And by the way, there will come a day when Christmas will be my wife and I take a Hawaiian vacation and don't give a shit about Christmas.
You do it.
Probably go to Bali. And if anybody says Merry Christmas to me, I'll just say, shut the fuck up. I'm trying to have a vacation.
There you go. I fell asleep watching A Year Without a Santa Claus, that good old Rankin and Bass nonsense last night. That's always fun.
That's a cure for my insomnia every year. Yeah.
And that one, especially because the Heat Miser, the brothers that are fighting, I love it.
There for that song. And then after that, I'm like, usually.
I know. Yeah. It was just something to put on the TV while I was kind of like scrolling through social media. Mm-hmm. And then I just fell asleep to it. And then I did get to, so I've been waiting for my mini-me to be ready to watch Doctor Who with me. And it's been, I mean, it's the holiday season, which is busy, but it's also end of term, which is busy. Mini-me is in honors and AP classes, so that's a lot of pressure. So we finally had a conversation and it was agreed that I could watch Doctor Who as long as I'm willing to rewatch it. And let me tell you, with that first episode, I'm so excited. I'm so excited. I even told my mom, I was like, when we get back to our Friday night hangout TV days, let's watch Doctor Who together, because she hasn't watched it yet. And so I'm like blown away. I cried. Oh, it was so good. Now, I will say you have to be a fan of David Tennant and Donna. Yeah, and Catherine Tate. If you did not like them, their pairing, their season together, you're not going to enjoy this like at all. And there were people who did not like Catherine Tate, recall.
No, and it's like they wanted him to have, you know, a love interest every season. And I'm like, no. That love interest was an aberration to the Doctor, you know, of all the decades of him being the Doctor. But this particular one was Catherine Tate. To me, Donna Noble was my favorite companion after Rose for him.
Yeah.
I mean, just loved her. She just came in and just took over, and it was wonderful. And, you know, Russell T. Davies didn't make it all about her.
Right.
Looking at you, Moffat. Right. Yeah.
Anyway. But yeah, that is really essentially what I got watched. What about you, Jeff?
I didn't like Catherine Tate. I didn't.
That's okay. You don't have
but
to.
But I loved these.
Good.
So I have turned your hypothesis and spun it on its tail.
Dang it.
There you go.
That did spin it on its tail.
Mr. Carter, when you're in Bali and you want to tell someone to shut the fuck up, the translation is DM.
DM.
D-I-A-M. DM.
Yep.
DM.
DM.
Seems
I'm
to me
I'm
going to
try and remember that and incorporate it into my everyday speech.
Yep. Basically, it's Indonesian, and they know how to say shut the fuck up quite quickly.
Yes. DM.
DM, DM, DM.
We do that in Scotland, too. It's yisht.
Yisht. Anyway, I watched doing a rewatch of Picard season 3, even better than the first time I went through it. And then Monarch, the Legacy of Monsters. I think we're on episode 6. And yep. we just ran into Godzilla again. And that was badass.
The first time on that island, I was like, yes.
Yeah.
the Bikini Atoll moment. I was like, yes, this is so cool. I now, we didn't get to watch this week's episode yet. So
Same. Everybody fell asleep and I had to turn it off. But no, it's, I am really, really enjoying it. It's Wyatt's Kurt Russell impression is getting better as the episodes go on. And then last but not least, I went and saw Godzilla Minus One. And I think it is, frankly, the best Godzilla movie ever.
Explain it to me, since there was very little hype around it.
Basically, it's World War II. Kamikaze pilot runs into Godzilla before Godzilla's gigantic.
He happened to stand up.
Before he's just a little guy?
Well, yeah.
Like, that makes me think of Reptar.
He's like 30 feet tall.
Oh.
So for Godzilla, he's small. But from what I understand, and this is from Braxton, my resident Godzilla expert, is that all of the Godzilla movement was, for the most part, based on the 1954 Godzilla, the 90-pound Godzilla suit that was made out of old tires.
Yes.
So what I told Braxton was, best Godzilla movie, but I still appreciate the last three movies' animation to him. Even though there were things. So you're doing a long shot, and he's walking, and I'm like, meh, whatever. But then they did some close-up face stuff, and it was fucking great. His atomic breath isn't a laser beam. It's basically a nuke. And so he goes, nice. He goes, skronk, and it shoots and then stops, and then a nuclear bomb-looking thing goes off. But no, the acting was fun. Mm-hmm. It had stories. A couple of subline stories running alongside that worked out really well. The protagonist was, that kid chewed the fucking scenery. I tell you what, and it didn't bother me at all. I didn't mind reading 2.5 hours of the whole damn thing. I really enjoyed it. I did. And Tiffany felt so safe watching it that she fell asleep.
Oh, that's so good.
So the best Godzilla movie ever may not be the best movie ever, but I really did. I had a good time. If you have enjoyed even 5 minutes of a Godzilla film in your entire life, go see it. You'll like it.
Nice.
I will. And it's all subtitles, so that counts as an art film.
Yes.
Oh, yes, it does. Yep. Yes, it does.
So that was me this week. What about you?
Didn't get to see Monarch yet. Didn't get to see Reacher yet, which is really giving me the twitches right now.
Yeah, same. Absolutely the same.
But, so, since we couldn't watch those, the plan was to be able to watch at least some of it last night, but that didn't work out. So, instead, we threw on Chicken Run, Dawn of the Nugget. This is the sequel to Chicken Run.
Odd Compromise?
An awesome... Well, no, we are big Aardman animation fans in this family.
Okay.
We started with Wallace and Gromit, which just blew me away with how fucking funny it was.
Yep.
We were big fans of Shaun the Sheep.
Yeah. Yep.
We watched Shaun the Sheep in this house over and over again. And when Chicken Run came out, we were laughing all the way through. And so we were like, we got to see Chicken Run 2. And they had announced it like years ago. And finally it's out. It's on Netflix. It was released on Netflix, so you can watch. Anybody can watch it, I guess, if you got a Netflix subscription. Cast has changed just a little bit. They replaced for Rocky. They replaced Mel Gibson with Zachary Levi. So one problem actor with another.
Yeah. I was gonna say that wasn't an upgrade.
It was not an upgrade. No, it was not. I was like, who is his voice? It sounds so familiar. Zachary, fuck me, Levi. Okay. Ginger was replaced with Tandy Newton. But they did get back Lynn Ferguson, Jane Horrocks, and Imelda Staunton to play the other three chickens who were always Ginger's cohorts, you know. Mm-hmm. So this the original one was The Great Escape with chickens. This one is just a sequel. They don't even try to be another movie. But we do get the return of Miranda Richardson as Mrs. Tweedy, which was so fun. Oh, and Fowler got replaced with David Bradley. And we didn't even know his voice. We didn't even know they'd swapped actors until I looked it up. Because I was trying to look up who was playing Rocky now. And then I saw David Bradley's Fowler, but it was another actor before. But he just does the Fowler voice perfectly because David Bradley is the greatest fucking actor in Britain right now. All there is to it. And then their daughter, little Bella Ramsey.
Oh.
Yep, and she's awesome in the role. Yeah, it's a weird twist of a film. Absolutely delightful. If you like the Aardman stuff, you're gonna like this one. That's all I can say. Yeah, just a lot of fun. Just a lot of fun.
That's awesome.
Apart from that, I found myself watching the Cult Film Channel on Pluto recently, and
oh, that sounds delightfully horrible.
I gotta warn people about Bone Tomahawk. There's a scene in that if you're squeamish, well, I don't, even if you're not squeamish, it's probably gonna stick with you. You gotta be really dead inside for it not to stick with you. Because this stuck with me all week since I watched it. And if you're squeamish, yeah, you're not going to handle it. And up until then, you're like, this is just a weird cowboy movie where everybody talks really super formally with each other. And you know, they all use $5 words, as it were, all the way through. And they all understand it when somebody says some $5 word. Usually you expect at least one of the rednecks to go, "What the hell does that mean?" But no, all of them understand each other. It's the idea is that they're on the edge of the frontier, and they're like the place of civilization, and then past that is the wildlands, and their enemy are a group of natives who are effectively cavemen, and the expert in the town, who's also native, says they're troglodytes. He says they're not a tribe, they're just troglodytes. They live in a cave. And I was like, oh, this is really interesting. So it's civilization versus, you know, versus the wild. But when they get to those troglodytes, shit happens that it really bothered me, because troglodytes start to win. And I'm like, oh my God, this is disgusting. So yeah, it was gross. Yeah, got to warn you about that one. Watched the first 5 minutes. Watched the first 10 minutes of Barbarella, because that is the best first 10 minutes of a movie. Any movie that starts out with a striptease out of a spacesuit.
Right. I mean, how can you go wrong with that, really?
I'm like, this is a great movie. And then after that, I was like, once I saw Dr. Duran, I was like, I've seen this movie. I flipped it over to watch something else.
I mean, that's just it. It's the first time I saw it, I was young enough that was the closest to a porn I had ever seen. And then, and oh my God, when that was on, you know, because it was always on late at night. It was always on a UHF channel.
Yep.
And so I would sneak out in the living room and turn it on. Mm-hmm. Much like I watched Doctor Who as a child. You know, do the soldier crawl out of my bedroom into the living room and hope I could get the TV. Because you remember, I don't know if you will or not, Jocelyn, but it used to be that if you turned a TV on, even if the volume was all the way down, you could hear the TV anywhere in the house because of the vacuum tubes.
Oh, yeah, it popped.
Just, that was the background noise of television. You know, it was quieter on the Enterprise at warp. And so every once in a while, one of the parents would clue into the weird vibration and come and find me. I never got caught watching that movie,
Barbarella.
Good. But I always got caught watching Doctor Who. Anyway, just sharing.
Yes.
Did they never just give up and let you watch it?
Nope. Always sent me back to bed.
Sad.
Yeah.
It was when he got a little older. His dad finally said, "You know, I know you're doing it. Just don't."
That was sneaking out of the house. It's like, you can go out the door. You're bigger than me. I can't stop you. And I'm like, yeah, Dad, but that'll blow my credibility to go out the door. Can I keep going out the window? He's like, yeah, just don't break the screen. I'm like, okie doke. So, yeah, that was Dad.
I love it.
Breaks my street cred. So that was all. That was that. Just mostly Chicken Run and lots of Cult Film Channel on Pluto TV. Oh! Also, Doctor Who update. Tubi, the Tubi channel, T-U-B-I, Tubi, has the Doctor Who series. Like the original Doctor Who. They don't have every episode of the first Doctor. They won't have all the episodes of the second Doctor because so many of those episodes got lost. But there are glaring episodes missing for the first Doctor. Particularly the first series is missing, the first serial, which starts with An Unearthly Child, which was the original. And I've watched the Unearthly Child series multiple times, so I know it exists. I don't know why they don't have it. That's all. It basically starts with the Daleks, which was the second serial. But they do have the entire John Pertwee, Tom Baker, Peter Davison, Colin Baker, and Sylvester McCoy runs. And you don't have to wait. You know, it's not like watching these other channels where, like the BBC America channel or the Pluto channel, where you got to watch them whatever order they feel like showing them in. You can watch however you want to watch them. So you can start at the beginning and watch the whole thing. You know, just knowing you're going to be missing a lot of stuff in the Troughton and. The Hartnell and Troughton eras, because the BBC didn't think anybody would care, and so they erased the tapes.
I was going to say the BBC doesn't even have them, right? Because they got erased.
It was the beginning of using videotape when Doctor Who came on. It was they experimented with it. They did film it. It was originally filmed, but then the film was transferred to video. There were some films that survived. But not many, because they weren't taken care of. A lot of times they just destroy the film after they put it on video. And then they turn around and erase the tapes. So they got lucky to find some in other countries that they'd ship them to. But which is how we got all of the Pertwee ones back. A lot of them are in black and white because they were shipped to Australia as black and white film, because Australia didn't have color TV in the 70s. In the early 70s, so you wind up with black and white John Pertwee episodes, but they may have been color. I think those have been colorized by now. But what is fun is that they were able to recover audio for a lot of the old episodes, and the audio they put the audio in, and then they animated like whole sections of it, and then you'll all of a sudden have a live action section, and you go back to animation.
Huh.
Yeah.
And that works, though. I mean,
yes, and some are just fully animated, like the Abominable Snowman in the Troughton era is completely animated. The one that is glaringly missing to me from the Troughton era is the Highlanders, which was the first appearance of Jamie. But otherwise, it was it's like that's all there. So my report from last week about where you can find classic Doctor Who. Is amended now. We'll watch it on Tubi, and make sure you get it. Subscribe to Tubi. It's free. It's a free channel. It's a free subscription. Subscribe and watch it there, so they keep it, because it's great to be able to just watch it on demand. They also, Jeff, have all the old Spencer for Hire.
Fun.
Tubi. I have yet to find anybody who has A Man Called Hawk. What is missing, though, are the Spencer movies, including the premiere, the pilot episode of Spencer, which was a movie, which is based on one of the books, And then the movies that followed the end of the series, which were also based on the books.
Yeah.
I've yet to find those anywhere streaming. But the actual series of Spencer for Hire is available on Tubi as well. So, and Highlander, the series, is also on Tubi, if you're of that.
I might skip that.
Oh, though it's funny, I rewatched the first episode of Highlander, the series, recently and went, I can't believe I was that dense and missed all of the clues about Richie that are dropped in the first episode.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they basically, he and Connor basically spell it out that Richie's an immortal. It just hasn't turned yet. And I was like, I can't believe I missed that whole thing, because it was like 3 seasons before Richie turned into an immortal. And I was like, oh, fuck. You told me that in the first episode, and I completely missed it. Yeah, I just thought he was the kid who saw too much. And Duncan had to keep him around to keep him quiet, you know? So let's dive into some TV news.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
Well, in a very long article that offers absolutely no payoff.
Only a little bit.
It is speculation at best. Mm-hmm. But it turns out that Sherry Redstone is considering selling her controlling stake in Paramount Global. Redstone owns National Amusements. Mm-hmm. National Amusements owns 10% of Paramount Global. But more importantly, 80% of the voting shares of the media company.
Yeah, it's like you only own 10%, but somehow you bought the 10% you bought are 80% of the voting shares.
Yeah. So basically, it comes out that if you buy Redstone out, which is way cheaper than buying Paramount, you basically bought Paramount. Yeah. And then the article goes on to basically say, maybe the new owners of the hypothetical buyout might not like Star Trek.
You can tell me
if I'm wrong, but that is how I read this article. It was, here's a thing that may happen, here's the details of how it could happen, and here's a hypothetical about what also might happen if the new buyer doesn't like Star Trek.
So, the only one they bring up in the article, who is probably the most likely buyer to pick up Redstone's stuff, is either Bobby Kotick, who is leaving Activision, so he's a video game guy, or Skydance. And it's most likely going to be Skydance. Now, Skydance, they don't care about any of the channels. They just want controlling interest in Paramount. So that could mean they could leave Paramount Plus alone, which has been losing money for some reason. Probably because it's just one more damn streaming network, and the Star Trek series are coming out so fucking slowly that it's almost not worth having it, you know, except for the month you're going to watch, you know, the two months you're going to watch Star Trek.
Yep, it's a cancel in between.
Yeah, it's a cancel in between.
Some of us who are now addicted to soccer, however,
yeah,
do find the championship. what it's worth, their sports offerings are insane. They offer fucking sports that I didn't even know were a thing. That's
you
not
know,
hard
Skydance,
to do.
Skydance, not having an interest in Star Trek, I mean, this is the company that brought you the new Transformers stuff, Rise of the Machines. They're the ones doing Foundation. They did FUBAR with Arnold Schwarzenegger. They've been doing the Jack Ryan series. You know, basically, classic stuff, science fiction stuff, they eat it up. They're going to do it, you know? And they did that new Heart of Stone movie that was okay. They're doing Reacher. So they get what is they pick stuff that's a winner, and I'm like, if you grab it, you're gonna grab it to grab Star Trek: Strange New Worlds, because that is a winning show, and you then to see, and I'd love to see, I'd be interested to see what direction it goes if Skydance takes over. So, yeah,
we'll see. Fingers crossed. Hopefully, Skydance gives us a Star Trek 4.
Can I tell you? I mean, just from an outsider's perspective, there have been so many cases with like HBO getting merged with Discovery and then Discovery effectively taking over, right? We hear, you know, Disney buying out every fucking buddy and just taking them on and just taking them over. And to hear in this one, it's like, no, nobody's buying Paramount. It's just, somebody's going to take over controlling interest in it. I'm like, this is the kind of business takeovers I'm used to hearing about. Not, you know, these giant mergers into monopolies that you can't compete with anymore. Yeah.
Yep. This is just somebody who hopefully is a Star Trek fan wanting more Star Trek.
Yep.
James Gunn, in the most surprising move ever, he says, dripping with sarcasm, hired his brother Sean for a role in a DC movie.
What?
Yeah. What? Like, again? He's already been in two of them.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't, look, man, I like Sean Gunn. And if James wants to hire him every time he makes a movie, I could give a shit. Zachary Levi, on the other hand, popped up with a, I guess it's okay if your brother's running the show. And it's like, shut up, Zachary Levi. Go get a vaccination, you pussy. You whiner.
Yeah, it's funny because he's going to be playing Maxwell Lord. And the last time we saw Maxwell Lord, it was Pedro Pascal.
Yeah.
Playing Maxwell Lord in the Wonder Woman.
Oh, in the Wonder Woman
movie.
Yeah.
And I think Sean Gunn would play a perfectly, like, it would be the edge of the, you know, comedic foppery, but also underneath it all, there's this deviousness that's slowly becoming, you know, because the whole thing about Max Lord is he's controlling the Justice League to improve his media empire. And he gets to the point where he actually murders Ted Kord, the Blue Beetle, and Wonder Woman snaps his neck.
Like you do. Marvel Studios is announcing a new Black Panther series, Eyes of Wakanda, for Disney Plus. It's going to be an animated series that will debut in 2024.
They're moving to animation? I'm shocked. Shocked, I tell you.
Yeah, very shocked. So the big question is, will there be a Black Panther 3? To which we get from Marvel producer Nate Moore the following answer. Well, that's a great question. to be honest, this is not me trying not to answer the question. We really want to see how audiences receive the film. So, my guess is not anytime soon. Mm-hmm. New Jonathan Majors audio recording is one more reason Disney needs to recast Kang. More troubles brewing for Disney and MCU star Jonathan Myers as text messages and an auto recording between the Kang actor and his ex-girlfriend were entered as evidence into the actor's ongoing assault case. The new evidence includes disturbing text messages that were made public last week, as well as a new audio recording in which Majors allegedly compares himself to Martin Luther King Jr. and describes himself as a great man in what appears to be an attempt to prevent his ex-girlfriend from going out drinking with friends. I've never played the Martin Luther King Jr. card to keep a significant other from doing something. Perhaps I'm missing out. Hey, baby, I'm like Pontius Pilate over here, and Pontius Pilate wouldn't want you going out drinking on the night he kills Jesus. Wait, that wasn't a good one. Let me see if I can figure this out. So I'm Idi Amin. No, wait, that's not good. Pol Pot. Oh, fuck.
Fuck.
Just saying. I am a great man, I am doing great things, not just for me, but for my culture in the world. That's actually the position that I'm in. Okay. He likens his greatness to other important historical figures in the Black community during the recording as well, saying, no, don't you understand that? Because that team, that unit, right? Grace has to be lots of a certain mindset to support. Coretta Scott King, do you know who that is? That's Martin Luther King's wife. Michelle Obama, Barack Obama's wife. He's basically saying, do for me. I'm super important.
Yeah. I don't like it when I find out how people really are. It makes me sad.
Hey, look, they recast fucking Rhodey. They can recast Kang.
100%.
Yeah, you don't even have to change it out for Dr. Doom like you guys were speculating. Just recast him.
You know who would have been good?
Ooh.
Andre Brower. Can you see it? I can see it.
I can.
Alexander Siddig will be joining Apple's Foundation Season 3 as a series regular. You might recall him as Baltar on the newer Battlestar Galactica.
No. I recall him.
Oh.
Alexander Siddig was not Baltar. Alexander Siddig was Dr. Julian Bashir.
No, they're British. They're the same. You could just swap them right out.
They all blend together. Yeah.
Yeah, that's how it works. Yeah. I mean, don't you mix up your Brits? Constantly.
No. Not never. I know they all look alike.
They all sound alike.
I try to be culturally sensitive and not mix them up.
No, I'm just having a little joke because Baltar showed up on Picard Season 2.
Yes.
This week. As Picard's dad and was fucking amazing. I forgot how good he was. Just because the novelty of him being in it was like, hey, that's kind of cutesy.
Yep.
But yeah, he nailed it.
They actually did a joke between them that this guy and I'm Alexander Siddig. We're different actors.
Yep. Yeah, it's fun. It's like Karen Gillan.
Gillan. Yes.
You know, Sam Reich, CEO of Dropout, recently did an interview talking about doubling the College Humor successor streaming subs and content output. They are going to raise the price a little bit, so I would get it while you can at this price. Mm-hmm. And they're doing well enough that, unlike most of Hollywood, Dropout will be profit-sharing with its employees.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
That's I'm not awesome. Kidding. If you got a Roku or an Apple TV or a Google TV or whatever, Dropout.tv is the shit. It is fucking great. It is making original long-form content that's basically all your favorite shit from TikTok in a half an hour format. Mm-hmm. Or if you like D&D-like games, because I can't play D&D because that's licensed already other places. Dimension 20 has some of the most talented role player actor/comedians I have ever seen. They're fucking hilarious. So, yeah, Dropout TV is doing very, very well. They just dropped a trailer for season 6 of Game Changer. Game Changer being the game, the game where the game changes every episode. And the players don't know what the game is, and they have to figure it out as they go to try and win.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a lot of fun. And then that turned into Make Some Noise, which is basically an improv game played by three people. And it's the whole goddamn, it's just fucking great. It really is. So if you haven't had Dropout TV yet, this is me telling you to go do it. Because Sam Reich, son of Rob Reich, Clinton's former, economics guy.
Yep. Robert Reich.
Which is fun because.
The guy who is right every single time.
Yeah.
And even his reasons for leaving the Clinton administration, because he was so pissed at Clinton with what he was about to approve that was going to fight against labor. He's like, out of here.
That and Glass-Steagall.
Yep. And he was right both times, and Glass-Steagall as well. He was right. He was correct. He was like, I can't work for you if you're going to do this. I fucking love that guy.
Yeah.
Professor Reich is my favorite.
Well, what's funny is that Sam's a CEO, and he also hosts both Game Changer and Make Some Noise. And he's been trying to get his dad to do a cameo forever. And when they finally did a cameo, it was on a different show, and all he did was spend 5 minutes making fun of Sam.
Oh.
So when he finally does pop up, it's fucking hilarious. It's the Broken News Network, and it's basically four people reading the news, not allowed to laugh or smile, and the scripts are fucking hilarious. Mm-hmm. You know, so again, it's more improv games. It's just a delight. Dropout TV, but
man, I feel.
Go ahead.
I was a big fan of Adam Ruins Everything, which was a College Humor show, but it got picked up by True TV. And then Adam Conover was like, fuck this. And he got out of it all, you know. And I'm like, damn, I wish he was, because this is the kind of shit he would agree with. you know, with Reich's, you know, the, everything that Reich is doing, like profit sharing and everything. He's like, he totally would have agreed with it and been in on it.
Oh, no, he's there not... all the time.
Oh, is he involved in it?
He's a, yeah, he's a rotating cast member. They bring him in all the time.
Good. Nice. I want Adam Conover, because this is the kind of shit he would have. This is the kind of stuff he was advocating kind of between the lines when he was doing Adam Ruins Everything. And yeah.
So that's it for the news.
All right, another break. And when we come back, we're talking comics.
My name is Peter Davison. I played the Fifth Doctor, and you're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Neil Armstrong waited 6 hours and 39 minutes to step onto the surface of the moon. Jackie Robinson waited 20 months to play his first game with the Brooklyn Dodgers. And even DiCaprio had to wait 22 years to win an Oscar. You can wait until your destination. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Kevin Eastman, co-creator of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and you're listening to me on the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Wah, wah, wah!
All righty, let's do some comic book news.
You know, it would be nice if we had a little longer leader to this so I could put the sound effect in, but I can actually find it.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
Stray Dogs creators are coming back with a new animal-based horror called Feral. This one's about cats. But this is coming out from Tony Fleeks and Trish Forstner. And it was a shame. Trish couldn't make it to Wasatch Comic Con this year because of COVID.
Yeah. Yeah.
Aww,
she got to see.
Yeah, she was supposed to be here. Yeah.
But these two wacky funsters are the creators of Stray Dogs. Huge surprise hit that took a cute and cuddly approach to subvert the serial killer genre. This one says Lady and the Tramp meets Silence of the Lambs. That came out in 2021 and has sold nearly 1 million copies across all formats, which is pretty cool. Feral will also be taking the cute and cuddly approach to flip a genre. In this case, the zombie outbreak. Think The Aristocrats meets The Walking Dead. The Aristocrats, the Disney cartoon, not Aristocrats, the fucking joke.
Yeah.
Which is still one of the best movies of all time, is The Aristocrats, the movie about the joke, not the Disney movie.
Not the Disney movie.
Yes. Yep. So yeah, this is pretty cool. I like these guys. Loved Stray Dogs. So, cats dealing with zombies—that seems pretty funny.
Yeah,
you know,
I like it.
A point.
If cats are what survives or what's surviving the zombie apocalypse, that's not at all shocking to me.
Nope. And then Marvel, it turns out, has finally settled the legal battle for Spider-Man and Doctor Strange rights. Basically opening up the question, are other actor or other writers, creators, you know, is it time for them to sue, or do you think Marvel will pull their head out and try and get ahead of it financially before they're sued to some close to oblivion?
I don't know who's left, you know, maybe some of the creators from the, you know, from the 70s who were creating new things.
Yeah.
We already had the Ghost Rider lawsuit. Or attempted lawsuit that they got laughed out. They got laughed out of court for. The Ditko one was a little stronger because there was so much chicanery going on during the Stan Lee era that it was difficult to know who owned rights or who didn't own rights. So in the end, the company owns the rights, but or at least they continue to attest that they own the rights because you were all contractors. You were all work for hire, but it's like, there was a lot of promises made in the back end that never got put down on paper, usually by Stan. So, yeah.
Yeah,
and
the
now
original
that Stan's gone, there's no way to go back and say, okay, what did you actually mean by this, Stan? You know,
right.
You can't depose Stan Lee anymore. So, yeah.
So the original lawsuit was a class action brought by the estates of late comic book creators Coolin, Ditko, Heck, and Rico. Everybody but the Ditko part settled in June, and the Ditko part settled here just a few minutes ago. So we'll see.
Well, the others created characters that have done really well and have had multi-billion-dollar movies, but Spider-Man is still the masthead. He's still the... you know, the flagship character, so I can see the Ditko's holding out a little bit longer for Spider-Man, even more so than Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But that's it for the news.
All right, well, what have you guys been reading this week? Jess?
I managed to read a single issue of a comic book, and it was Captain America number 2, and it was just delightful. I don't know, it's not really delightful, I guess. We're talking about the Nazis and... you know, bad shit's coming down and Steve's going to fight. But I liked it. I enjoyed it. I'm enjoying the writing. I'm enjoying the artwork. I think it's a solid Captain America. So what about
there's
you, Jeff?
There's a moment in issue 4 that I really appreciate Straczynski coming in as a writer. I just appreciate this. Just this little scene, a fight scene in issue 4 where Steve's like trying to figure out, okay, how does this guy fight? Is he super strong? Is he, oh my God, do I need to get out of here kind of guy? And he kind of walks you through his process. And I was like, wow, that's really cool. And I'm just so grateful that a good writer like Straczynski's back taking on these characters, because nobody else would have thought of that. I know I wouldn't have thought of that. So, yeah.
Well, good. I'm excited. I'll have to keep pouring into my stack this week in the craziness of this week leading into the holiday for me. How about you, Jeff?
I took a step aside this week and came across a very well-read set of the first 3 trade paperbacks for Ultimate Spider-Man by Brian Michael Bendis that I've never read. I started reading Ultimate Spider-Man when Miles Morales showed up.
Right.
So I have never read these, and I started book 1. Last night, and my meds were a little too effective, so I set it down and I read a little more this morning. I like it so far. It was like, I hope it maintains, and I understand that it does. Like when Bendis took over Superman, you know, those first few issues were fucking golden. I mean, they were wonderful. And then it got weird, and then it got weirder, and then people were unhappy, you know. But as far as I know, his run on Ultimate Spider-Man, people just fucking liked it.
With Ultimate Spider-Man, he had one piece of freedom that he never had on any other book he worked on. He didn't have it on Daredevil. He didn't have it on Superman or Justice League or Avengers or anything. And that was, he didn't have to worry about going back to the status quo at any point. He could create this and write it the way he wanted to. And it's so good. Way down the line, I'm sure they've got trades for all of it, but way down the line, he, like, Peter Parker is eventually in a relationship with Kitty Pryde.
Nice.
Because they're the same age, right?
Yeah.
Well, at least in the Ultimate Universe, they're the same age. And he's actually in a relationship with Kitty Pryde for a while. And it was so well done. Just all the way through, there are these little moments that I was like, this is the stuff where I was like, this guy is a fantastic writer. He's one to watch out for. And then... He just kind of fell into this editorial thing. And then editorial got to the point where they were like, well, it's Brian Michael Bendis. Whatever he writes is gold. I'm like, no. There still needs to be an editor saying this could be better to keep him on his toes. But yeah, this was this Ultimate Spider-Man run was fantastic. Absolutely.
Nice.
So I picked up Stack on Friday and then spent basically Saturday sitting in my easy chair reading comic books. So I was pouring through my whole stack. Let's start out with some Marvel. Gang War with Miles Morales, Spider-Man. So this is pretty much the only Gang War title I'm picking up regularly. Dear Vicente and Valenza, the art team. Okay, trying to follow your fight scenes is like trying to watch the second Jason Bourne movie and follow its fight scenes. You can't. You're coming in too tight. You've got too much stuff going on. I don't know what the fuck I'm even looking at in the panel. pull back the camera, give me something I can appreciate. That's all. Otherwise, you know, Ziegler's writing is on par, is, you know, right up there. Although I'm kind of getting bored with this whole Cape Hunters thing. It's such bullshit. But yeah, I'm just bored with it. Moon Knight number 30. This is it. The end of the Moon Knight run. They'll start a new one next year, but don't know if I care. But it was a nice little bow on the end, everything. So it was okay. All right. Batman, Santa Claus, Silent Night number 2. Great issue. The final page was a huge payoff for this whole thing. Superman showing up finally, and just the look on his face. I mean, it was just priceless. Wonderful. And then finally, from DC, Danger Street. This was book 12, so this finishes up the Tom King run. This is the latest Tom King maxi series, Danger Street. Dude, this was a wonderful fairy tale using D-list characters all the way through. That was just so much fun to read week to week. I still praise issue 9 for the way he handled the fight scene between the two badass guys, the two, you know, fighters, and the way it was all done. Just, again, when a Tom King maxi series comes out, I buy it. And it's crazy because sometimes it just means the death of a character, of a beloved character, by the end of the book. This one, not so much, but it was just a good story all the way through. Last and not least at all, the one I really want to talk about, The Highlands by Philip Amond. This is it's two books, book one and book two. It's a continuing story. Dear Cinebook, this could have been one book. They're thin. You could have made it one book.
could have, but then you would have only paid for it once.
Exactly. Good story. It's, you know, it's basically written for me. It's about a painter who gets falsely accused, and there's all the, you know, hiding out in the Highlands kind of thing. If I have two problems with this book, the first is they're oversized. They're magazine sized. And I don't, I'm like, please just make them regular size. You don't need to make them oversized. But it was nice to read it because it was quite cinematic, Cinebook. The other problem I have is that it was set against the 45. It was set against the you know, Bonnie Prince Charlie coming to try to retake the crown. And you know, it ends with there. You actually see a Culloden scene and everything. And I'm like, I get you wanted to write about Culloden. Everybody writes about Culloden. Scotland has other historical periods you could have put this in. You didn't even need to have this battle be the backdrop. It could have just been in that time period and it would have been just fine. But we've already done Culloden with Outlander. We've already done Culloden with all these other stories. It's like, give me something that's different, you know, that's changed. And yeah, it would have been a little better that way. But otherwise, yeah, to me, it's like, you know, when they set every damn, you know, historical love story against the Civil War here in the United States. It's true. Like there are other periods of history that would have been just as interesting, you know. And they could have pulled the main character away to fight or whatever, even though there's no problem here. But yeah. So apart from the whole Outlander vibe to it, it's still just a fantastic story. And I loved it. And like I said, it was written for me. The art, Amon's art is wonderful. And everything about it is just really rock solid. And his depictions of the Highlands are spot on. It looks like you feel like you're in Scotland as you read it. So yeah.
That's awesome.
You know what else is awesome?
What?
Today is Tuesday. It means tomorrow's Wednesday. It's time to give our picks of the week.
You only say hello so you can say goodbye. These two words must make your life complete. You pick out the hearts that break to make your ego high. And I was just your pick of the week.
All right, Joss, start us out. What are you looking forward to?
So we're going to go indie first this week. This is actually a second printing. So this week, if you're on the ball, you could pick up number one and number two, maybe at your local shop. The Deviant from Image Comics. It is a from James Tynion IV. As snow falls over Milwaukee in 1972, a blood-stained Santa Claus commits unimaginable atrocities against young men. 50 years later, a troubled young writer interviews this so-called deviant killer who still maintains his innocence from behind bars. And as Christmas approaches once again, the past returns, wielding a sharpened axe. This really just sounds like a true crime story set at Christmas time in a comic book form. And I'm there for it, I think. I'm there for it. Yeah. How about you, Jeff? What's your indie pick of the week?
Going with The Agent from Ablaze Comics. This one is another strong female protagonist.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Love those.
It's got some magic mixed in. It's got some weapons mixed in. It just looks good. Nice. And I like Ablaze. And if I like Ablaze, what I love is fucking Mad Cave Studios. These guys are awesome. This one's called Nature's Labyrinth Volume 1. In the middle of the ocean lies a remote island complex lined with traps and an ever-changing landscape created by a mysterious man known only as Ahab. The island was designed to test the wills of the world's most notorious criminals. Hmm. It goes on and on, but it looks pretty fucking good. I like Zach Thompson. Undone by Blood and Brother of All Men. And then mainstream, he wrote Yondu, which was actually pretty good. So Zach Thompson, Bailey Underwood. This one just looks interesting. And like I said, man, I do my best to read everything Mad Cave puts out. Not only do they put out good content, they're a wonderful company. I like them a lot. We should tag them in something.
Yes.
Okay.
What about you, boss?
So my picks for my indie picks this week. I'm also looking forward to The Agent. I was looking at it in the, you know, for next week and, immediately threw it in my hold. Because I was like, the thing that caught my eye, honestly, was the recreation of the Nick Fury number one cover from back in the '60s, the op art or the op art, cover, that they did. And I was like, wait, what is this? And so I started reading about it. I'm like, oh, it's Harry Dresden. It's, you know, it's urban fantasy. I'm down. Sign me up for it. So I immediately signed up for that one. And then, from Boom Studios, we get Animal Pound finally coming out. Animal Pound number one. This is basically Animal Farm by Tom King, who I just praised for his work on Danger Street. This is Tom King doing Animal Farm in a pound. Yeah, this is something I'm all for. And this is apparently not a no-kill shelter. So yeah, this should be quite the crazy story. And it's Tom King, so I'm 100% on board for that one.
Well, yeah, that's awesome.
So Animal Pound coming out from Marvel Comics. Doctor Strange number 10 will be coming out. This is the showdown between General Strange and Doctor Strange. And it's an easy one for me to pick because I love Doctor Strange. And then from DC Comics, we've got Nightwing number 109 coming out. And as always, when it's Nightwing, I pick a Nightwing. But then on top of it, I've got Batman Santa Claus number 3 also coming out. So I'm just going to have a good week.
Yeah, you are.
I got a Tom King book. I got a new urban fantasy book. I got some Doctor Strange, got Nightwing, and Batman Santa Claus. So, yeah, I'm good.
I love it. I love it.
How about you? Yeah.
Yeah. Jeff.
Mainstream. Hawkeye by Matt Fraction and David Aja.
I saw that.
It's coming out in an omnibus, which means that this is one of those where I say, here's my pick of the week for other people with real jobs to buy.
Yes.
Because it's an omnibus.
It's an omnibus, but oh my God, this was, if you've got the money,
honey,
or if you're looking for a good present for someone in your life, and they're kind of a little between superheroes, they're not sure, I always say, read Hawkeye My Life as a Weapon. Read it. And this is Hawkeye My Life as a Weapon, and then some. So, yeah.
Yeah. But if you are thinking of getting me a present, do not get me this. I own all of this already.
Yes.
In trade paperback. This is just, I like it when an omnibus comes out with something that I like a lot. And then out of DC, Batman Offworld number 2. I am still very interested to see where the fuck this story is going. Jason Aaron hooked me in the first one, and I'm just going to keep reading it.
Nice.
There you go.
Yep.
Very nice.
What about you, Jocelyn?
I do know from Marvel there is a Daredevil Black Armor number 2 coming out. That's, of course, the easy default pick. But I'm actually going to look for Doctor Strange by Mark Waid, Volume 1 trade paperback. I loved Mark Waid's run on Daredevil a few years back, and this just kind of caught my eye, and I might really enjoy it. I've never read a lot of Doctor Strange, so I'm going to pick it up and maybe give it a look-see and see what I think.
This is the Doctor Strange in space run.
Yeah, yeah, this is the Doctor Strange. Tony Stark's going to send him to outer space, it sounds like. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
Kind of fun. It's kind of fun, and this leads into Doctor Strange MD. That you were reading. Yeah.
Nice.
Yep. All right. Well, let's jump in our TARDIS and give the pick our picks of the future. All right, Joss, what's your pick of the future?
It's a Tom King pick.
Hey!
How, like, let's just keep talking about how great we think Tom King is, I guess.
Oh, my God.
It is, yeah, Helen of Windhorn number 1 from Dark Horse. Following the tragic death of her father, C.K. Cole, the esteemed pulp writer and creator of the popular warrior character Othon, Helen Cole is called back to her grandfather's enormous and illustrious estate, Windhorn House. Helen is going to wreak drunken havoc upon her arrival, and her chaotic waves begin to soften as she discovers a lifetime of secrets hiding within the myriad rooms and hallways. It's a 6-issue miniseries. It's Tom King. There are certain writers, especially with the 6-issue mini, that I'm going to just grab it every single time, and he's one. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to get that. It sounds great.
Yep.
How about you?
Right.
Mr. Jeff.
I'm going to do Spider-Girl, the modern era epic collection. I've never read it before. And it's basically a what if about Peter and Mary Jane having a kid. That kid is Spider-Girl. Collects What If 105 from 1989 and Spider-Girl 1 through 15 from 1998. And the annual, I don't know what that means. I guess I'll figure it out. And then the annual from 1999.
All right, then.
So, yeah, it just looked interesting. And, you know, it was either that or Black Widow.
Yep, fair.
So what do you think?
I think another writer I'm just enjoying the hell out of has been Chip Zdarsky. And his run on Batman has been really good. He gets that opportunity that our writers often get, which is he gets a chance to define a character a little further. And in this case, we're going to get Batman's 142 through 144 in the month of February. And it's it's the title is The Joker Year One.
Oh, wow.
So from the moment of him falling in the vat of acid, wearing the Red Hood hat, and coming out and looking and becoming the Joker, that first year of him being the Joker, and what does that mean for Batman and everything? And the fact that they're, at first I was like, what the fuck? They're running three issues of Batman. Then I read that it's all the Joker Year One. And then the solicitation for March shows that it's going to be, we're just jumping back into the regular Batman story and how this whole thing, his fight with his recent fight with the Joker, this Joker Year One and everything that's gone on with the Zur-En-Arr is going to affect him. So, yeah, it's a really smart move to just let me just dump all three issues in one month, and then we get back to the main story. So we don't get a slowdown in the story. We get a brief interlude to, oh, yeah, I wanted to talk about this, and then, boom, we're right back into it. So that'll be fun. Well done. Good smart move there from DC and Chip. I mean, Chip wrote the stories a while ago, but, you know. It's just a matter of good job. Anyway, that's my pick for the future. Anything else, kids?
Not a thing.
Nothing.
As always, I remind you to, when we give these picks of the future, if you hear something, you're like, hey, that sounds really good, go to your local comic book shop and order it, because now is the time to order these things. More and more comic shops are not over-ordering things because they're like, I don't want to get stuck with 100 copies of something nobody wants to read. So if you want it, order it. Order it now. I also remind everyone to join us on Patreon at patreon.com/defendmedia. It's where all the cool kids hang out. We got a Patreon squad. We're trying to turn it into a Patreon platoon. And the money you donate on Patreon helps keep this show going. Helps keep us going. Helps keep the network going. We've got some big plans for the network coming up, and we need to do even more. So, plus we've got the end of the year bill coming up.
Yep, that January bill.
I know, because I've got my January hosting bill coming up too, and it's making me pucker a little bit as well. So we're going to be coming up on that. So yeah, get in. The easiest way to do it is join us on Patreon and help us out there. Yeah, easiest way. And this week we're going to pick up some more reviews and talk some Doctor Who.
Sweet.
So I will say, as I always do, until Moon Knight's dead again, make mine Marvel.
For Hell's Kitchen.
For Stan.
For Asgard.